Oh, good evening. Good evening. I'm Mr. Pine in here. Bill Porter is his real name. He lives in Port Townsend and sits with my old friend Larry and Silas Hoadley. There's a little nucleus of sitters up in Port Townsend. Beautiful little town on the water. And this guy is one of them. Red pine sounds very exotic. And he looks quite exotic if you've seen his picture. He has a lot of hair, long beard, and he's been around for a while, so he has a lot of character. And he's done a lot of work, a huge amount of work in translation. So I think we've gotten to part two. At least that's how it feels to me. Which he calls Abhidharma in the light of Prajnaparamita. And I've never studied the Heart Sutra in terms of the abodes, the way he describes it, the six abodes and the six domains and the six kinds of consciousness. That's so abstract that it's hard to connect it with the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, color, sound, smell, and but actually, in a way, it's helpful to, if you're going to look closely into what it's trying to say. The Sarvastivadins were trying to, as he says, investigate the nature of experience. And our experience is all coming through our body. And so, of course, we have to sit down and check it out. What is this? What does it mean to smell something? We know much more about it now. We know about the actual parts of our nose and tongue, mostly tongue, that bring in smell and taste, and they're connected. It's very interesting. We can look deeply, deeply into how these things work, how it is that we see, not in our eyes, but way back here in the back of our brain, that the light comes through and is refracted and goes into the optic nerve, which shoots all the way back to the back of our head. So just examining the body and considering it is quite a magical and fascinating thing. It's what we are. And we just come shooting out of our moms in this form without having inquired about it or asked for it, as far as we know. We just came like this. And then we try to operate. Or it seems like we're trying to operate with this system. Although if we really look at it, we have to see that most of it's on automatic most of the time. We see, but we don't know we're seeing. We don't consider that we're smelling when we smell something, unless it's something really special, really bad, or really good. All of these things are just the way that we are carried through our life, sort of in the ocean of life. The ocean of our senses are a part of it. It's how we're connected. It's our relationship with everything. And of course, there are all kinds of people, especially science fiction, trying to imagine a body that has other kinds of ways of experience. Maybe there's another world that we're walking around in, but we don't have the senses to experience it. So that's mysterious too. We don't know, really. It's kind of marvelous. And looking into all of this, of course, the question is, what are we? What is this that we call me, myself? And the Sarvastivadins created this. I love what Red Pine did with the six abodes when he talked about how connected we are. You know, the toe bone connected to the foot bone. He says, as with the skandhas, in a world where nothing exists by itself, where every division of one thing from another is a misperception or a misconception of the way things really are, there are no eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, or mind. We cannot, for example, draw a line around the eyes that is not necessarily arbitrary. There is no point at which the eyes begin or end, either in time or space or conceptually. The eye bone is connected to the face bone, and the face bone is connected to the head bone, and the head bone is connected to the neck bone. And so it goes down to the toe bone, the floor bone, the earth bone, the worm bone, the dreaming butterfly bone. Thus, what we call our eyes are so many bubbles in a sea of foam. This is not only true of our eyes, but of our other powers of sensation as well, including the mind. So abodes means the place where we live. So we live within our senses. Domains means our territory. So that's the function of seeing, our sight. And then the six kinds of consciousnesses are the way that we connect, the contact. Says it's how we locate our experience in an ocean of flux. He says, together, these six powers and six domains comprise the 12 abodes by means of which we can trace and locate whatever we know of our experience. But like the skandhas, these also turn out to be devoid of a self, or anything that might be called self-existence. Of course, someone might say we would not normally look for ourself in the abode of the ear or the abode of sound. Normally, we would look for ourself in the abode of the mind or the abode of thought. Surely, this is where we could find ourself. But what we find in our mind and our thought is the same as what we find in our ear and in sound, an ocean in constant flux. And often that's the first experience that we have in Zazen, of somehow finding our way into Zendo somewhere. I remember sitting down the very first time at Tassajara and being amazed that my mind wasn't quiet. I thought, it's very still in here. Nobody's saying a word. I thought I would just be really, really quiet. And instead, I was amazed at all this stuff that was going on in my mind. It was hard to believe. And, of course, it's an ocean of flux. It's just thinking. Thinking, thinking, thinking. It's how our mind is sets itself to work, just as our precious ears set themselves to work as best they possibly can. And we are being informed continually in this way, in a continually flexible, changing, very dynamic world in which we too are very dynamic and flexible and changing. But of course we feel pretty solid. We feel very fixed. And it's only when we think about it, or when we think about it, we have to, or analyze it, we begin to see that maybe there's more to this than I thought. He said, they all, the 12 abodes teach us that they all turn out to be arbitrary distinctions, cut from the seamless fabric of reality. Or as Avalokiteshvara might say, from the seamless fabric of emptiness. Thus, Avalokiteshvara's point is to push practitioners, such as the Sarvastivadins, one more step beyond the 12 abodes to which they had have become attached. Satisfied that there is no self among the 12 abodes, the Sarvastivadins stopped their self-analysis and assumed that the 12 abodes themselves were real. Nothing else is real, but these are real. But the only sense in which they're real is in their emptiness. Thus there are no eyes or ears or mind and no shape or sound or thought. So all dharmas, the dharmas of the 12 abodes, the dharmas of the 16 consciousnesses or abodes, domains and consciousnesses, all of those the Sarvastivadins thought were dharmas that were solid and real, and everything else wasn't. And what it's saying in the Heart Sutra is, even these. So then it goes on to one of Buddha's most essential teachings, one of his insights when he was sitting, about which he said afterwards that if you get this, you've got it. And that's Pratichutsamutpada, or interbeing, or the whole utter interconnection of our life from beginning to end. It's a concept, another one, like the other 18. It's a concept that helps us, and it helped him by going over and over it in his mind from beginning with ignorance all the way around what ignorance creates and what that creates and what that creates, all the way around to old age and death, and realizing that that creates ignorance. That's the beginning of the whole thing. It's totally connected. So I don't know where the page is anymore. The origin of the formula is, the Buddha says that this is simply the Dharma and not his creation and not from by anyone else. It's just an insight. On the night of his enlightenment, he asked himself, what is the source of suffering? And answered that it's old age and death. We, none of us, want to die. And as we get old, we realize it's hard. Being a body is really, really difficult. And so that already we could call as suffering. The origin of suffering is old age and death. And he then asked, what is the origin of old age and death? And answered that it's birth. And the origin of birth is existence. And the origin of existence is attachment. And the origin of attachment is thirst. And the origin of thirst is sensation. The origin of sensation is contact. And the origin of contact is the abodes. And the origin of the abodes is name and form. And the origin of name and form is consciousness, vijnana. And the origin of consciousness is memory, sanskara. And the origin of memory is ignorance. So it looks like you can't even get out of it. The Buddha said ignorance consists in being ignorant of cause and effect, and ignorant of the way things are. Memory consists in our habitual patterns of speech, action, and thought. Consciousness consists in the six forms of sensory consciousness. Name consists in the four formless skandhas, and form in the skandha of form. The abodes consist in the six senses. Contact consists in the six kinds of sensory contact. Sensation consists in what is pleasurable, painful, and neutral. Thirst consists in thirst for the realm of desire, thirst for the realm of form, and thirst for the formless realm. Attachment consists in attachment to desires, attachment to views, attachment to rules, and attachment to a self. Existence consists in existence in the realm of desire, existence in the realm of form, existence in the formless realm. Birth consists in obtaining a body, and old age and death consist in losing a body. So I have a handout. I went through my computer today and found a whole series of things where I found things that not only Red Pine said, but that Coben said, and I have quotations from someone called Obora, and sometimes I have some things from other teachers as well. So Coben's talk about avijja especially is the thing that I think is the most important in here, explaining the ah means not or no or mu, and so avijja means light, and avijja is the first link. It's ignorance, no light. That feels better in a way than thinking of ignorance as some kind of being really dumb, sort of blundering around and not knowing anything. It isn't like that. It's not having understood all the connections, the cause and effect that have created this system that we call me, and been able to see. Without light, we can't see. And so as long as we're unable to connect with this lightness, then we are caught by ignorance, caught by not being able to see, lacking insight, you could say. He said one side of the character of Myo, which is another word for light, is sun, and the other side is moon. So it's all the light, the natural light that we know, is the opposite of ignorance. That's our light, is the sun and the moon. Everything else, all other light that we have comes from those, comes from the sun. He said, in Zen, there are five hindrances which hinder our vijja, our awakened state of mind and body. Desires for property, sexual love, food and drink, fame and sleep. Blind desires are caused by mumyo, by ignorance. It's like you wish to have a hand, which you already have, but you cannot feel it, because you're in darkness. You desire to have something which seems to exist as separate in the external world. I and you. I and that. So the whole question in awareness of living is that of maintenance of life. If you don't eat, you live in perfect innocence all the time. By eating this apple, you maintain your individual life and limit your perfect innocence. Karma is the cycle of life. It goes on and on, whether you're aware of it or not. So those five hindrances are not bad in themselves. And that is what always seems so interesting to me, that we need every single one of those. We need shelter and food and sleep and sex and being known by others. We fade and fall away, and old age and death come, bam, just like that. But each one of those is built into us to want a whole lot more. He says, like having a hand and not knowing we've got enough. And it's, you could say in our culture especially, we don't really know what's enough because we have so much, that it's so easy to want more. And so, you know, the little houses in my neighborhood are being overbuilt into bigger houses so that things become more. And it's that way with being known. We need friends and relationship. We thrive that way, and we fade away and die if we don't. But lusting for fame is a whole different thing. Being known by everybody in the world. Ta-da, here I am. So those things hinder us from the light, hinder us from insight, being able to clearly see how things are. So we eat the apple with gratitude and give up some of our innocence as we do it. We kill in order to eat. So that's part of Buddha's insight too, that our life is difficult and constantly qualified by the things that we do in action, the effect that we have on everything else and everything else on us. It's all connected. And if we do it in ignorance, it's not only that we're hindered, but the whole system becomes a hindrance. And there's great suffering in it. Not just for me, myself, but for my world. They're looking now into anger. Where in the brain anger is coming from. Hoping that they can find a way to control it so that maybe mayhem and murder and war won't be so constant. That there is actually a neuron connection that they're discovering where it's based on light, where if there's a lot of light, mice will tear each other limb from limb, especially male mice. And if you lower the light, they become very peaceful and gentle and kind. And they're starting to find this in other animals also. I just read that this afternoon in Science News. And having just put this together, makes a lot of sense. So the question, of course, is what that light could be. What this self could be. What this light life could be. So that's enough. Coben said, when ignorance, no light, becomes light or wisdom, all the links of the chain become as such the wonderful workings of wisdom. So if you see the Tibetan image of the monster time, the black monster holding this chain of causation in its claws, you can see each little figure all the way around. They're all connected all the way around, and greed, hate, and delusion are animals in the middle. But there's a Buddha way up here. And with the light of wisdom, suddenly the whole thing becomes lighted up. And that's why Buddha's up there just waiting. Always knowing that, of course, we have a hand. We don't have to worry about having a hand because we already have it. We're already there. Questions? Karen?
I heard a talk this week from the Skeptics Conference website. My friend said she really wants to go to this. And he was arguing there is no free will. And while I'll listen to this, I kind of fell asleep listening to this, but first time I'm skeptical. I think there is free will. but it almost, by the end, I was, you know, his argument is we're born, we don't have a choice where, who we're born into, whether we're born in the city or whether it's in, you know, mm-hmm. we don't have a choice of all of these influences. And, you know, you really expanded this to the consequences in our society. If we accept there's no free will, what do we do with criminals? They didn't choose to do what they did because it was just a bunch of
yes.
circumstances.
And yes.
So this concept, the dependent origination, or is this tied, can I tie it together? I don't know where to put it in the Buddhist perspective.
Well, that was in the article, too, saying that this could be a problem if they discovered that this is something that people are born with. Then do you put them in jail and call them bad? Or, you know, how do you deal with it in an ethical kind of way?
Right.
So the Buddhist view doesn't wrestle with free will. It talks about connection and karma, about how everything is connected already to everything. So past and present and future, in one sense, are all in already. So we don't have to worry about free will so much as just keeping the precepts of just minding ourselves in the moment.
But what if in our past or all of our collective experiences we weren't really brought to the precepts?
Well, many people were not, and so we can't be them except in another way. But our job is to be us. And so, talking about free will, you're talking about yourself. You can't talk about anybody else. It's just your own fate, you could say, that everything that we were born with, all the conditioning determines, going all the way back to Lucy, I always think, or before Lucy, now there's before Lucy, all those people, everything that happened to them affected what's happening to us now. So in that sense, we're not free at all. We inherited all of that, just as, you know, we inherit our skin color and our hair color.
But we think.
We are able to think. We've got this incredible extra little piece of ourselves that can actually consider things, like them and not like them, and all of that. And so, of course, we do have an effect on what's happening now. We have power over it.
I want to say there must be some free will, because I have been given all this.
Yes.
I've been given all the teachings. And I can still choose to sleep at night rather than sit. Or
that's right.
We
inherit the ability to act. Dogen talks about it in terms of action. That we are, you know, we are a verb, you could say, and our life is action, and we can choose to hide under a log and ignore and live in ignorance, live in the dark. And many people do. And it's very complicated, and there are many levels to it, because sometimes someone will hear a word of truth and the whole thing will change. It's like a light goes on. And then take responsibility and change a life and actually become a kind of bodhisattva. So it's not simple. Now we've ended up here, and it's not completely clear how we got here. You know? it's quite amazing that we found ourselves in the midst of what we call practice and are living this, or efforting to live this action of wisdom that seems to be calling us, being our present, our experience. And we can't make other people do it, that we often wish we could, but we can keep faith with it and stay with it ourselves. I think that's our will, our free will, is our devotion to our life as practicing. And just doing the best we can, and it's never really very good, but it's good as we can do. We do our best. Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you. Well, it's 8. So, we'll go on, but not now. So, it's the end of the month. So, is that all taken care of? Or is this a discussion for
opening,
etc.?
I think Ellie's going to open next week and be dough on. So if anybody can come early, she would appreciate help, I'm sure.
Yeah. Great.
And I'm not sure the date of our half day sit in April.
It's the 11th. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and Samuel has a, must not forget that.
There's an art opening, very unique, of three different artists. Giroux, those of you that know him, calligraphy, Hildy, oil painting, and I don't know the potter, his name is Masa. It's this weekend, in the fullness of the moon. Opening is Friday night and Saturday and Sunday. A very unique art show. So if you can come.
Where's the fullness?
The show is called that, but it's in Santa Cruz.
Oh, it's in Santa
Cruz. So I'll leave the cards here. Please take one and give them to whoever might be interested.
And you're serving tea?
Yeah. A lot of us are taking different shifts and doing tea. It has that flavor to it, the show.
Yeah. Nice. Now let's have our 1 minute sit.